to be called selfish,
to be considered self-centered.
Like, it actually cannot be named that. Like, I don't want to be associated with the word selfish in any context.
Girl, selfish is not a bad word.
It is about self-respect. It is about what we want.
It is about
self-care.
It is about self-love,
self-fulfillment.
Welcome to the Selfish Latina Podcast,
where we get to be selfish together.
Okay, are we ready?
You're
so awesome. All right, so here we go.
Well, I started doing speaking engagements in, when was my, I mean, like, I remember, so we're around the time of the car repo. A friend of mine reached out and said, hey, I work with a nonprofit and they're looking for speakers to speak for 15 minutes at local middle schools, and they're paying $50 for every 15-minute increment that you speak. And usually you're called to speak at one school for 2 to 3 classrooms. I was like, sign me up, you know? What do I need to talk about? And I was literally just going to classrooms speaking about my career as a graphic designer and then working on this film. It was like the beginning of talking about the movie and how I was creating it. My first big audiences were kids. And then somebody that worked at the nonprofit, she took me aside because there was this really, really, really bad group of kids, like poorly behaved kids. And she's like, hey, I'm gonna walk with you. She stopped me right before we walked into the classroom and she's like, these kids are really difficult. And don't worry, you're gonna do great. They're probably gonna talk over you. They're probably gonna be mean and jerks and whatever, but just try to get through it. But I know you're the person for this.
Thanks very much. Well, hello. You guys are so energetic today. All I know is I was back there all nervous to talk to you, but now I'm cool. I'm kind of used to that type of anger. I'm kind of used to that type of way that people talk to each other because I grew up with it. It's not my favorite place. I think I'm going to come closer to you guys. It's definitely not my favorite thing to hear. I actually grew up in a house where my normal was my dad yelling at my mom every day. Every day. I was so used to that type of anger. At some point, it actually came as a revelation when I slept over someone's house for the first time. And her dad didn't yell at her mom the way that my dad talked to my mom. And I realized that is not normal. And that is not cool. It's not cool to feel not safe. One time it got so bad in the house that I grew up that my dad went to work, my mom went to my school, she took me and my brother, and we totally left. And we went to Puerto Rico, because that's where my family's from. And we hooked. So there's definitely going to be people that are going to be talking while I'm talking. I have a few things I'd like to share with you guys today, and I think it'll make a difference. I've spoken to thousands upon thousands of kids in Denver, and a lot of times what happens is sometimes kids cry, sometimes they laugh, but mostly they feel like somebody gets them for the first time in their entire life. So for those of you who are going to choose to listen, I appreciate you in advance. And I am going to ask those that can't help themselves to give me a little bit of respect today. That's the only ground rule I'm gonna give you, okay? And if you choose not to, that's your choice. You get to miss out, and that's your choice. But for the next 20 minutes, I would like your attention. Say aye if you agree to give me that respect.
Aye.
Thank you very much. So I told that story about my dad and my mom a little bit premature because I wanted to address what I just heard backstage. And I really do hope that you guys sort that out because that's...
I chose to tell them in detail that story because I knew I needed to make myself relatable to these kids because I walked in and there's nothing about the way that I look then or now that shows a teenager that's dealt with a lot of stuff that I also dealt with a lot of stuff. There's nothing that, and so I use that story because it had worked before, and I didn't want to bust it out because I didn't mind telling it to 10 kids. I didn't love telling it to whatever 200 kids that were there, you know. I didn't want to. I was very reluctant, but it's kind of like the last tool in my tool belt story. They were crying. They were quiet. They were hugging me afterwards. I was crying. I was hugging them. I was like, is that even appropriate to have told them to the gal from the nonprofit? And she's like, oh my God, that was great. She was probably crying. That was like my baptism into being a speaker. And I definitely, anyone that ever wants to be a speaker, walk into a high school assembly and try to own that room. Those are the hardest rooms to own.
Denise is a Latina filmmaker and cultural storyteller. She's dedicated to helping individuals, organizations, and companies transform how we experience culture, how we experience identity, and belonging.
I have been writing customized keynotes for each audience for years. And it's been frustrating because, you know, not having kind of a unified message has created a lot of work on my part and a lot of testing of new material. So the good part about that is I've tested a lot of stories, right? And I've seen what material works and what material doesn't. The bad part is that it's exhausting to create something new time and time and time again. I had felt nervous for a long time about talking about belonging as the main message, but I knew that belonging needed to be the main message.
Thank you for that. I hope you had a chance to share some of your unique experiences as a kickoff to how we look at the rest of this morning and how deeply we engage together as a community in Denver Public Schools.
So I walk into one of Denver's biggest event centers. There's 1,200 teachers waiting for me, and I'm about to speak, and I am super nervous.
Let's all go back to 1981-ish. I was in sixth grade, and I was anticipating doing something called the Country Report. All year, I had been thinking and talking to my mom about it, about all the materials we were going to put in the Country Report. My mom's from Puerto Rico. And we would go to Puerto Rico about once a year for all the things, like the showers, the birthdays, the celebrations, sometimes Christmas, right? And we would pick like brochures, and she said, Denise, you can cut this out and put it in your country report. Awesome. And we took photographs from the beach, and my mom would say, we'll use this picture for the country report. And I was so excited for the country report because I never had a chance to express my Latinidad in New York in the suburbs of Manhattan where I grew up. I couldn't wait internally to be known, to being a Puerto Riqueña, because I was just Denise Soler, but no one could pronounce my name, so I was just Denise Solar. So, I also really wanted my mom to know that I was proud of my Latinidad, and doing an amazing report would show her my pride. The day came and I was super stressed out because I was positive that like the first person would pick Puerto Rico, of course, right? Because it's like the most interesting country in the world. So I'm sitting there at my desk waiting and stand up in front of Ms. Pasquale and very enthusiastically say, Puerto Rico! And she looks on her pages and then she looks up at me and she says, Denise, Puerto Rico isn't a real country. Puerto Rico is a territory. This is a country report. You need to pick a real country. I think that was the first one that cut deep. I can't stand feeling embarrassed. Now, I know none of you love feeling embarrassed, but for me, I will avoid anything to feel embarrassed. And literally, I can trace it back to that exact moment, okay? All I knew when I got home was that my mom, I told my mom what happened, and then it wasn't a real country, and then my mom is Latina, and she was like, oh, really? Okay. What's your teacher's name again? All right, mommy's gonna take care of this. And mommy took care of this. And a few weeks later, I was standing in the front of my class presenting the most amazing country report on Puerto Rico. Thank you very much. Yes. And I got a chance to be known. And I got a chance to have her be proud of me. And I also got a taste of what the next several years in school would be like for me, of the kind of rejection I would feel, and the kind of otherness that I would feel, and the moments in time that I just wasn't willing to tell my mother about because there were just too many. Who can relate to my journey by a show of hands? Yeah, okay, look around. That's like a quarter of the room, okay? So, I want to ask you guys, what one area do you think you can adjust in your schools right now? Can you think of one thing?
But the way I felt when this was over was that I bombed. And
was that I what?
What?
Was that I bombed? You got a buried bomb.
Was that I bombed?
It bombed a little.
So, yeah, when I walked off the stage, I felt like I bombed.
And so at first it was like, well, whatever. I just felt like I feel like I could have done better. But then I'm like, the message is the message, you know? And I have to say, this really sucked. Challenging. And it probably contributed to me not doing my best, you know?
It was because of the faces, mostly blank stares. And it was so hard. It's weird. When I'm up there on stage, sometimes I'm also talking to myself at the same time. Noticing, wow, this isn't landing. For some reason, this isn't working. I wonder what I'm missing. Did I forget something? And my internal dialogue sometimes is very loud. When it's working perfectly, there is no internal dialogue.
So what was the internal dialogue going on? Like, what am I doing?
What am I doing? So my internal dialogue that day, it was, what am I doing wrong? I shouldn't have come up with all this new content. Sure. Yeah, obviously I suck at this. These stories aren't working. These lessons aren't landing. The people aren't responding. But the way I felt when this was over was that I bombed. Hearing this now, I realized I didn't. I just knew that I could do better, but I didn't know how. So I reached out for help.
Yeah, I'm Joe Calloway, and I work with Chris Young. We've got a little business we call Next Success. And what we do is we work with professional speakers and people that are entering the speaking business. And I think more than anything else, we help them think through and get clarity on what their message is, who their market is, and how to position for that market.
The interesting thing about the business of speaking, is watching this industry and how it's changed.
One of my favorite metaphors about coaching is that the best of the best, most talented people have coaches. And I heard once Michael Jordan has a coach because he can't see the way his arm is extending when he makes a throw. The reason why he has a coach is to make sure it's extending in the perfect of ways. So I brought in coaches not because I think I'm like an Olympic level speaker or world class yet, but I want to be. And there's a big difference between where I am now and where I want to be. And I needed help. And so I reached out to the best people that I thought could help me. Chris knows events. She knows what good sounds like because she has hired hundreds upon hundreds of speakers for events. Joe brings incredible feedback from the point of view of a man who's been on, I don't know, thousands of stages over the last 20 years. I mean, someone who knows the ins and outs, the ups, the downs, the all arounds, the good, the bad. And when I share something that I think, I don't know if he's going to know what I'm talking about, he always knows what I'm talking about. And he always has some great story that makes me feel like, A, I'm totally normal, and B, keep going, right? Like, it's worth it to keep going.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Just off the top of your head, does it feel better to envision saying, I've kind of got two general presentations, for example.
Mm-hmm.
One is Latino, one is for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tweak those a little bit to fit the particular audience. But I've got two presentations. Or does it feel better to say, I might have 11 presentations? No, depending
right.
on...
market. I love going deep with this particular presentation, what I do. It's super funny, and it's really most valuable when there's a mixed audience, but equal parts Latino and, let's say, everybody else, okay? So I definitely could do that, and I could market it like, you know, it would be so customized. It'll feel so great for those people. And I love the idea of being able to talk about myself as this person on a journey to make 16 million people feel less alone, and then stumble on something that would make everybody feel less alone. That
like,
works.
That puts that whole thing in a different perspective to me right now. I'm like, wow.
The thing is, when people feel more connected, when we're in a more connected world, it's a more creative world. It's a safer world to live in. It's like such a simple concept, but I know that our film makes people feel less alone, and so therefore more connected. And then I talked to a bunch of people, and I realized that also what makes us feel more connected is to feel known. Not just to say, this was my experience, but let me tell you about my life. Like, let me tell you about how we adopted this girl from John, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a beautiful thing, and you're included, and everybody gets to go in that conversation. And that's why I love it, because everybody gets to go, and no one's seen as, you don't get me, or I'm different than you. Everyone gets to be a part of that. And so I can talk about the old film and the new film at whatever extent they're interested in. And so I feel like it's more like a gauge, like maybe two.
So it's just, one
yeah,
body of
it's
work.
One body of work. And I could really emphasize the Latino thing for that small group of people. But really it's about, I think, positioning myself as someone that stumbled on, that wanted to make, you know, obsessed with making sure people felt less alone and did this thing, but then learned all this other stuff, you know?
So what I'm doing now is fine-tuning. So what I'm doing now is fine-tuning their feedback, and I can't wait to try it out on a new audience.
Okay, so just know this intro may be edited, okay? So I'm just kind of playing with it. Ready?
Ready.
So I don't know about you, but I am terrified to bring my whole self to work. This is probably the scariest concept. This is probably the scariest concept. I brought my whole self to work kind of accidentally. I made a film about my life, and then I built a career. I needed to tell the story of what it was like to feel stuck between two cultures, ni de aquí or ni de allá. I wanted people to feel less alone, or in other words, I wanted them to feel like they belonged. And making the film actually took me on a journey to understanding the importance of belonging. So, the doorway to belonging is making the decision that you are willing to belong. And for the next 17 years, if anyone asked me if time or money wasn't an issue, what would you do with your life? I would say I would make a film about Latino identity in America and how people feel like they're not American enough and not Latino enough. And one day I'm going to make this movie, and it's going to change the hearts and minds of everyone that sees it. One day it's going to happen.
I love that section. Then the Louis section, there's another part of that Louis story where you're super nervous to talk to him, right? And this is our first interview with Louis. And then he tells the whole room to be quiet.
Oh, yeah, the two Louis.
Right? That's so good, to tell the whole room to be quiet. And, like, that's how he made you feel like you belong. Like, he gave something to you there, right?
Yes.
It's a lot like
that's
respect.
An awesome idea.
It's a lot like, you know. But he gave it to you.
He created that for me.
Yeah, he created that for you.
All right. Oh, my God.
That's a really nice.
That's a great moment, Henry. Yeah. Okay. Because that is really good. Because then I can talk about Despacito, and that always gets a laugh.
And then you can tighten up the second story.
What's the second story?
Where about his daughter.
Okay.
And so it's like everybody knows Louis, and here's how I met Louis. And we start with that. And then the...
Okay.
And then the second...
Hang on. Pause.
No,
pause.
It's okay. We got it.
I gotta get it.
Yeah.
Hang on.
We hope you're all excited to watch an amazing film that will transform how we think and speak about culture, identity, and what it means to belong. Following the film, we will have a discussion with Denise Solar-Cox, co-director of Being Enye, on the topic of Project Enye, culture identity, and belonging.
Why do I share that story? It's because the third step in belonging is being willing to take a risk. I don't know what the relationship was like between my Louis and Luis Fonsi. But I do know that he got called out. And he called him out in front of a big group of people, okay? And my Louis took the risk of doing that for the sake of this, for the sake of the interview, for the sake of my ability to conduct the interview. I felt like he did that for me. And it gave me a sense of belonging to the moment, okay? So we can create belonging in the moment in an instant by taking a risk, all right? And I know that risks sometimes work out and they sometimes don't, and that's okay. If this keynote was all about every single time I fell on my face over the last 6 years, there wouldn't be enough time. I wouldn't have enough time to tell you every time I was rejected. I wouldn't have enough time, okay? But it's still worth it because you're worth it.
Being open to feedback is probably one of my things I'm most proud of in my journey with this. I definitely came into it very closed and afraid because I didn't love feeling, who likes feeling, criticized? And I feel like the more open I am, the more jewels I get versus the opposite. In addition to the coaches, I'm also blessed with an amazing team that has really insightful feedback that I trust 100%.
Like you, because I was listening to you, but I was watching it on the phone. Yeah. It felt like you were just talking to me.
Oh,
like there
really?
Was nobody else in this room.
Yeah, that's super powerful.
But me and you on my screen, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was intense because it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't sitting in a room full of, you know, 100 people, you know, people moving in their chairs. It was just me and you.
Yeah.
So
wow.
And I think we can work on that too with like, you're really good at talking right.
If it's about you, it won't work. Mm-hmm. Now you can tell your story and that can be about them, but it's ultimately got to be about them. By the way, Chris mentioned statistics. Don't waste your time ever by talking about the 56% increase. Over 18,000 children go to bed hungry in Nashville every night, and you could just see the audience. But if you get up in front of them and say, I want to tell you about Lewis. Here's his picture. When Lewis gets home from school this afternoon, here's what's going to happen. You've got him.
Got it.
Stories about people. Leave the numbers out.
Well, I only added them in because like I'm getting paranoid that I have to speak into all these different types of people. And they're like, say statistics for this type of learner and say stories for that. Like I normally wouldn't. I'm definitely like a heartstrings communicator. So yeah. I'll take them out.
And there's something to that. There are specific kinds of learners. Well, they don't want to hear any of us anyway. They'd rather read it.
Yeah.
The trap we can fall into is And I had fallen into this trap. I'll think, well, I've got to reach everybody out there in the way they want to be reached. And what I'd end up doing is totally diluting my strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which yeah. I need to go with my strength, and that's I'll right. probably win over some of those statistics. Yep. People. But the thing is, if I don't reach 4% of them, so be it. As long as I've clobbered the other 96%.
Your strengths are, like you said, the heartstrings kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So stay there. Right. I still have to get to that. Mm-hmm. When have I felt like I belonged, or when have I felt like I didn't belong? And what was that like? And what got me there? What kept me from that? Those things are so powerful.
And you know what? You might even want to throw in, this isn't a suggestion, it's a brainstorm.
Yeah. Yep.
You might even throw in, when I say belonging, I'm talking about those times when you felt safe, when you felt cared about, when you felt listened to, when you felt like what you thought and said was important.
And I love when you said it's the safest place in the world. Like, that almost made me cry. That's beautiful.
I'm here to talk to you today about the absolute biggest idea of our lifetime, and that is belonging. Belonging is the foundation of all of our work with Project Enya, including our award-winning film, Being Enya, our top 100 podcast, The Selfish Latina, my educational curriculum, our next film, and all of the content that we produce.
Creating a speech during the time of COVID and practicing in audiences you can't see has been a ginormous challenge. It's a ginormous challenge to start something brand new and write a brand new thing with a brand new theme. I have to trust myself in a way I've never trusted myself before, A. B, there's something about not being able to see their faces that has been a great gift, because that reliance on my own gut and also my trust in my team has had to go up. And that's been just a cool experience, you know, because I'm pretty much just talking to cameras when I deliver this, which has been like the most bizarre thing that has been at this point very normalized. I feel like people are super, super sensitive to the lack of connection. So this keynote is about connection. So working on this keynote has given me a chance to really reflect back on not only my journey with Project Enya, but my whole life. I didn't realize that my whole life was the makings of the belonging thing. I didn't realize that all these things that I experienced as a kid, that the silver lining of all of it was that I'd be able to speak about belonging from such a personal place. All of these moments that I call breaks in belonging were moments that I'm looking back on now and kind of understanding in a new way, and realize that they're not only are they the seeds to the project, but they provide a window into understanding the lack of belonging that I felt and my desperate, desperate need to make sure that people know, that everybody knows, is that you belonged all along. There was never a time that you didn't. And you can always access belonging. It's at your fingertips. And you can create it for other people too. And that, I think, is the most beautiful part of it. So if you'd like to see how this all ended up and participate in our very first belonging event on December 10th, go to projectenya.com/belonging-event. It's a ticketed event, open to the public, and you can invite all your friends. I cannot wait to share this with you, and we'll also be hosting a Q&A, and we'll be answering all of your questions that night. See you there.
Welcome to the Selfish Latina Podcast, where we get to be selfish together.